For 20 years, Small Business Digest has helped millions of entrepreneurs grow their business. We do this by highlighting ways they can increase profits. Whether these suggestions improve marketing and provide better financial management, offer robust people management ideas, provide speedier logistics, our guests each offer ways of reducing costs, adding sales, widening profits. I'm Don Mazzella, the program of Small Business Digest, and our next guest is Denise Leeser. She's president of Great Biz Tools, the maker of Web Access AI-driven health HR platform. That's all I'm going to say because I'm going to welcome Denise and ask her to tell us a little bit about herself personally, then her company and her product, and finally her website. Denise, so glad to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me, Don. It's really exciting to be here. Well,
so you start.
Go ahead. I don't know how far back you want me to go.
You're president of a very fascinating company. And how did you get a little bit of your background?
So I started out in corporate America, and along the way, I decided that I wanted to branch out on my own. And one of the reasons, I had a daughter with special needs, and I needed to figure out a way to make sure that I was there for her and meeting her needs at the same time of having a career. And so I started a consulting company. And we grew from there. We merged with another consulting company along the way, and here we are today. Our company, so between the two companies, the business partner that I merged with started his company before I did. So the combined company has been around for almost four decades. We have an expertise in HR tools that are technology-driven. And we also team of business experts, HR experts, psychometricians, and industrial psychologists that make up our team when we do product development. So we make sure that our products not only are easy to use and are what businesses really need, but we have the research and the science behind it to make sure they're actually delivering and giving you the results that you need.
I'm going to ask a dumb question. Exactly what does your product do, and how does it benefit our audience?
Great. So our product, we have two main products that in the assessment industry, in the assessment area. WebAssess, which is a pre-hire assessment tool, which provides science-based, non-biased testing to evaluate a candidate's skills, cognitive skills, abilities, and personality traits. And when you look at assessments, the benefit of doing that is you have a very non-biased, legally defensible way to actually determine during the hiring process, does someone have the skills that are required to be successful in the jobs? Because we know we can't count on college degrees anymore. With the recent college scandal, we know that college degrees are becoming less meaningless because of the types of things that are happening in colleges. But not only that, we're finding that colleges aren't preparing graduates for today's workforce. So what do we need to do to make sure that people have the skills that are required that employers need for their jobs? In fact, most employers are finding that it's like 84% of employers feel that the candidates they're looking at don't have the skills they need. So if you use a pre-hire assessment process that's science-based, you can determine if somebody has the skills, abilities, personality traits to be successful in the job without having to look at things that aren't related to job success, like colleges. In fact, only 87% of employers think that college graduates are prepared for jobs. And even the graduates themselves, only 6% of them feel they were prepared for work. So if the colleges aren't producing people that have what businesses need, and it's going to get even worse. The more technology we have, the rate of change of technology, a four-year degree can't possibly quickly keep up with what businesses need. So if companies like Apple and IBM start looking at people that without college degrees, like Apple, 50% of their job openings don't require a college degree. 30% of the job openings at IBM don't require a college degree. So how do you evaluate those people to determine if they have what's needed for success? A tool like WebAssess can help you do that. And it's not unbiased, so you're not going to discriminate people. You're not going to inadvertently hire people that shouldn't have been, or the worst is missing people that should have been hired. And then our other tool is called My Inner Genius, and it's a tool for helping companies rebalance their workforce as we come up with come upon the advent of technological changes. AI being introduced into the workforce, the World Economic Forum is predicting that millions of jobs will be lost, but the good news is 100 million net jobs will be gained. But that means that so many jobs need to be retrained. There's, in fact, even with just what we have today, 54% of employees right now need reskilling. So what do we do to make sure that these people, that your candidates, you don't want to lose people that you're currently working with that are really because their jobs are changing? So what we do is with this in My Inner Genius is you can give your employees an assessment, and that assessment can help them determine what would be the better job role for them of all of your new jobs. You can create candidate pools to determine how do you create a career path for employees, how do you keep employees as their jobs change, how do you rebalance your workforce as jobs go away and new jobs are added. It's also good for people coming out of college that don't have the skills needed that companies need, and it will help direct them to learning paths with organizations like edX and Coursera that are providing micro-credentials and micro-certificates to help them get retrained. So it's really a great tool. It's really it's an edtech innovation that we're really excited about.
It sounds exciting, but could we back up a little bit? Again, what is the name of the product? Just you mentioned it, and I want to make sure our audience knows the product.
Sure. So the pre-hire assessment tool is called WebAssess, WebAssess. You can go to webassess.com to find out more. And the other product is My Inner Genius, all one word, and you can find it at myinnergenius.com as well.
Okay. I know enough IT to be dangerous. But thankfully, I'm not at that stage. But I'd like to ask you, you talk about the skills necessary. In my experience over the years, I could take any young person that's willing to learn and teach them what they need to know, whether it's Word or it's AI or anything else. To me, the core needs are they trainable? And are they willing to learn? Which, to me, are critical elements more important than skill. Do you address those issues or just the skill issues?
You're exactly right. So making sure somebody can learn, most jobs require some kind of retraining. And no matter what their experience or training is in the past, it doesn't tell you what they can do in the future. If they can apply that knowledge on the job, it just tells you what they've learned in the past.
You know, I can teach anyone who's willing to learn, but how do you assess that they are flexible enough and interested enough to make the change?
And that's such an important point. We all know that if you're looking at a resume or a college degree, it only indicates what they have already learned, but it doesn't tell you how quickly they learned it, how well they learned it, if they can actually apply it on the job, and how that relates to the skills that are required on the job, or if they can actually learn new skills. So what we do with our cognitive ability, skills and abilities, and personality trait assessments, we're looking at all of that. So we're looking at general learning ability. How quickly do they learn? with our assessment, we have done validation studies to predictive validation studies to show that these tests actually work the way that we're claiming that they do. And we can show through our validation studies that people that score higher on our assessment actually learn 10 times faster than people that score lower. So we're looking at that. We're looking at work ethic. We're looking at organizational commitment. Are they committed to your organization? Are they committed to the job? That those sorts of things, those intangible things, are really hard to see on a piece of paper. We look at productivity. Do they work efficiently? Do they work effectively? Do they make errors? And then we also look at personality traits. So we're looking at things like integrity, and like I said, work ethic, and different things, so all kinds of different aspects that all contribute to success on the job, as opposed to job knowledge, which job knowledge tests are one of the lower predictors of future success when it comes to looking at how you pre-screen people. Because we don't know, like you said, are they able to learn new things? And it's much better to actually, most companies, even if they do know something, they're retraining people their way. Even if you know how to use a computer system, they're going to have a customized way of doing their way, or they have different policies. So you have to do some kind of retraining anyway. So you absolutely want to make sure that you're hiring people that can learn and learn quickly. We actually had one client that had a four-week training program. They were paying people to go through this training program, and they were getting terrible results. People weren't learning. They had a high dropout rate, even though they were paying people to be there. They had a 50% dropout rate just within their training program. Just by using pre-employment assessments, we were able to decrease that dropout rate in half immediately. But better than that, they got such better results. People learned quicker. So they were able to drop the four-week program down to 3 weeks. That's a huge cost savings. And then when they get out in the field, they were even got even better results. The supervisors had fewer headaches to deal with. They had much better productivity, fewer errors. They had lower turnover even once they got out into the workplace. So the better results kept coming and coming. The more the employee was there, so it went past training. And so we're looking at all of those key skills. In fact, when you look at the skills that are required for success in the future, as AI starts to take over some of our jobs, the skills that are uniquely human, the skills that you're talking about, are what's going to be required to be successful. You're going to need to be able to communicate to people. You're going to need to be able to learn. You're going to need soft skills. You're going to need interpersonal skills like empathy, curiosity, creativity. You're going to need to be able to do creative problem solving. And all of those skills are things that we're assessing for. And those are things that are going to be needed in the future. In fact, Josh Burson just came out and said that the skills needed are...
Denise, we're talking with Denise Leeser. I'm interrupting you only because you pack so much information into your presentation, and this is radio, and it takes us time to absorb everything. So I'm just stopping you for a second so that our audience can catch up with you. I'm
okay.
Giving you a great compliment, whether you realize it or not. Great, you're president of Great Biz Tools, and you're talking about an area that I know from our surveys and everything is really important. And I'm going to ask you a question, which is, when I talk to managers and companies throughout this country, they talk about the fact that kids are coming out of college expecting everything to be handed to them, and so they can parrot it back rather than what is necessary to think for themselves. How do you test for that?
Well, it has to do with your underlying cognitive abilities as well as your underlying personality traits. And when we talk about personality traits, we're not talking about personality types or styles like, am I an extrovert or an introvert? Those sorts of tests aren't predictive of job success. The types that are predictive that we use are called personality traits. So those traits are getting at your underlying motivations. What is it that motivates you to act? So things like autonomy, being able to work autonomously, being able to work without direct supervision, being able to think for yourself, those are all things that have to do with your innate cognitive abilities and personality traits. A lot of these things are things that can't be, that have to do with the way the person is. They're not necessarily going to be learned, although some of them you can help people become better at it. But these are things that are absolutely things that you can assess that you can't see on a piece of paper, on a resume, or tell from a college degree. And what you're indicating is such a critical, important thing for us to know that, you know, we have to look at. I had one, a friend of mine said he had was having people ghosting him just in the interview process. They weren't even showing up for the interview. He decided he'd invited a bunch of people to come to the interview at 8:30. The first person that showed up is the first person he hired because he just couldn't even get people interested enough is the personality, the cultural issues that we have with certain age groups is that they do have certain expectations. But not everybody, it's a stereotype, so not everybody has that. And one way you can determine that is through assessment. You can determine, do they have the work ethic that we need in our company? And that work ethic is something that is really critical no matter what the job is. That's really a core competency. And so, yeah, we can assess for that, and that is a really critical thing.
Do you ask candidates to take a test, to answer questions, multiple choice questions? How do you go about doing this?
Yeah, so we have two types of tests. We have skill and ability tests, and they're all timed. So those are getting at core cognitive ability, like can you do problem solving, reading comprehension, mathematics. There's different. We look at a job and determine what are the skills needed for success on that job, and then we assess for those with the appropriate tests. So those are some jobs require visual perceptual skills. Some require verbal perceptual skills, mathematical. So it depends on what's required for the job. Those are all timed. And that's a really critical piece because you not only want to know, do people have that skill, but can they process it and apply it quickly? So the time tests are really a great thing for that sort of assessment. And then the personality trait assessment is just a questionnaire. And it's a really easy questionnaire. A lot of personality questionnaires are really complicated. It's like you have to pick one of five, you know, adjectives that best describes you, and you're not sure, you know, there's a lot of complex assessments out there that are hard to use. And because of that, you get a lot of errors. Ours is super easy. You just look at a question and you say yes or no. I mean, does it apply to you? Yes or no. And because of that, we have really, really high validation information regarding our tests are extremely predictive because there's very little error when you have that sort of test. And that's not timed. That's just, yeah, people just take their time answering that.
And do people come to the assessment center or do they do it over the phone, over the internet? How do they take the test?
Well, in today's remote working environment, we have all of our tests are online. So a company can create an internal testing center where they have people come in physically and take a test on their computer. It's all done over the internet. Or they can even take the test from home if you have remote workers. We still have a way of assessing them at home. The only thing is we recommend that they take it on a laptop or a desktop or a tablet as opposed to a phone.
And how do you charge for this to a company? And do you do this for small businesses as well?
Yeah. In fact, our company was founded on servicing small to medium-sized businesses. There are a lot of assessment companies out there, and a lot of them spend a lot of money marketing to big companies, and they have a really high price tag. And to be honest, I talked to the a president at SAP, and he said that their experience, most of the tests that they've tried are too expensive and don't work. And he loved what we were doing because we were really looking at science-based approach that is that shows results, that gives results, that we can prove results. And when we're marketing to small to medium-sized businesses, we didn't want there to be a huge price tag that creates this barrier. What we did is we price everything. First of all, for WebAssist, you get a free 15-day trial. You get the full system for 15 days to try for free. We'll even help you set it up. So you can try it out and see if it's something you want to do. We don't require you to be qualified or anything like that, jump through a bunch of hoops. We have all of our consulting and industrial psychology and psychometric background built into the system. So you don't have to be an HR person. You don't have to be an industrial psychologist to be able to use our system. We have many operations people in small companies that are hiring people. They don't have an HR person, and they can use our system. And we do a concierge service. So we will walk you through everything, answer your questions, whatever you need. We're there for you. And what we also have a model, a pricing model, where it's per use. You only pay for what you use. You don't have to prepay for a large amount of product that you're never going to use. A lot of small to medium-sized companies in particular are seasonal. They have peaks and valleys. They don't want to have a set fixed amount that they pay every month based on their highest volume. So you just pay each month. You only pay for what you use. That's it. It's just simple. You can go to a license agreement if you want to, but you're not locked into it. You can just go per use. And I think that's something that really can fit. I have some companies, they only use two tests a month, and that's fine. They don't need it very often, but when they do, it gives them great results.
Your websites again for our listeners?
It's WebAssess, WebAssess.com, and MyInnerGenius, all one word, .com.
Well, you know, we only unfortunately have a limited time left, but do you also develop tests based on industry?
Yes. Oh, so that's an important point that I didn't mention is when I mentioned that we had a lot of consulting built in, we have developed customized industry-specific assessment batteries for you. We've even developed what the cutoff scores should be for you. So our system allows you to go in and just basically select what we've recommended based on all of our years of experience and validation studies and job analyses. You can just go ahead and say, you know what, I have customer service people, I want to select that one. I have somebody in the appliance repair, I can select that one. I have somebody in the financial, I can select that one. So you don't have to know how to do that. Now, we do allow you to make adjustments. If you have that expertise, you can come up with your own test battery if you want. But you don't have to have that expertise to use our system. And a test battery is a combination of scalability and personality traits that are designed specifically to meet the needs of those industries.
Well, but do you also do it by sector, transportation, or retail?
Yes, we have all of that. What we do it based on job family. So whatever that job family, so there's titles within the job family, but it's down to the level of the job family. So it's really targeted. So like if you did, like I want to do everything, and there's a lot of skill variation between the different jobs in retail. So we would have like somebody who's in sales would have a different set of assessments than somebody who's answering telephones, telemarketing or that kind of thing. So we have it down to the job family.
Well, now I'll ask you a loaded question. What do you see in today's young people that you like about them, and what you worry about that they seem to be lacking? And first, let me ask you a different question. Does your test involve younger people, or does it go all the way up the line to mid-career people?
I'm sorry, you cut out. So, were you asking me about our assessments for non-exempt?
No. Are your assessments geared for younger people just starting career, or does it go all the way up to mid-career and beyond?
Yeah, all of our assessments are designed for any age group, any job family, but we focused not on management and executive level. So we're looking at the workforce. So, but it doesn't matter what age, what point
yes.
in their career. It can be used for making promotion decisions as well as hiring decisions.
Your product sounds so fascinating. I have 1,000 questions, but we're getting close. Let me ask you this one. This is a loaded question. What do you see in today's younger generation that's positive, and what do you see that you a little worrisome as they come into the workforce?
Well, one thing that I find really exciting about the next generations is their level of curiosity. I don't know if it's because they were raised on technology or all the video games, but outside the box in a lot of ways, just because they have that experience. They also are really technology savvy. So that is very helpful when it comes to learning new things. I have an 8-year-old daughter, and she was able to help my mother-in-law, my 84-year-old mother-in-law, with her computer. I mean, it's pretty amazing that they're able to learn technology so quickly. On the downside, I think the biggest thing that I'm concerned with is that entitlement, like you mentioned earlier, of feeling like they want it handed to them. I think the attitude of they don't have to work hard, or they don't want to necessarily work hard in all situations, because they're not used to it. I had a friend of mine that worked in a university in Northern California. He was told not to give anybody a grade lower than B. I think that's really going to be, that attitude is really a detriment to these generations. They don't know what it is like to fail and to have to figure out how to succeed in those situations. They've been so protected that I really fear in the workplace how they're going to handle critiques and performance management and developing in the workplace and being able to work with others and handle criticism and be able to succeed in that environment. That's my biggest concern. But I think there's a lot of great qualities that I think those things will come. Unfortunately, so many of them don't have. When we were young, everybody had a part-time job in high school or college. A lot of them haven't. So a lot of those skills that they have to learn on showing up on time and how to behave at work are things that the first employer, which is going in, we're looking at probably professional employers, is where they're going to have to learn that in their first job. But once they get past that, I think they'll be able to learn those things and do extremely well. They're very curious. They're very entrepreneurial. They're very innovative and have a curiosity. I think, they all look at apps and think of 10 ways they can make it better. And I just think there's ways that it's really going to be a benefit, but there's some growth pains we might have before we get there.
Well, Denise, I'm going to ask you the follow-on question, which is, can your product identify this sense of entitlement that to give a prospective employer something that he or she needs to be aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. So this gets at those personality traits we were talking about. What motivates people to behave? What motivates people to act? And so we do have personality trait scales that get at, are you able to work autonomously or do you need constant supervision? Are you industrious? That gets at work ethic, hard work. I work hard and I'm going to stick to work no matter what. And then we also have that we get at commitment. Am I committed to things? Do I see things through? Or do I just, the first obstacle I come to, I drop it and I go on to something else. So, we have assessments for that do get at all of those traits. And we, you know, like I said, the companies that we work with have gotten tremendous results. They've decreased their turnover, decreased errors, increased productivity. But beyond that, they have a better workplace culture because everybody is a better fit for the job, more satisfied, they're more successful, and that has a much better work culture than where you've got angst in the work in the workplace. And they stay longer. And so that's really exciting. You can save money, have a better workplace, and you can have higher customer satisfaction rates on top of it.
Denise, Lisa, unfortunately, we've gone over in the time, but what you've been saying is so important. Thank you so much. But before we go, your website so people can go further?
Webassess.com, WEBASSESS, like web-based assessment, webassess.com, and myinnergenius.com. Thank you so much, Don, for having me. This has been really fun, and I've really enjoyed this, and I really think what you're doing, reaching out to the small to medium-sized businesses, is fantastic.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your time. A link to your website will be on our website tonight. Have a great day.
Great. You too. Thank you so much.
One, the Tony Soprano, the famed fictional crime boss who grew up in the Ironbound section of Newark, New Jersey, turned to a psychologist to resolve some of his conflicted emotions. I grew up in the Ironbound section of Newark at the same time as depicted in the forthcoming movie prequel to the television Soprano saga. In the highly successful television series, Tony Soprano was a man born to the mob, yet questioning his birthright, the rules he lived by, and the people he associated with. Tony Soprano was not alone, and my book, Frankie, If You Get Hurt, I'll Kill You, talks about those changes and the people they affected, myself included, and the fictional Tony Soprano. The period 1950 to 1965 was the time of major changes hitting Tony Soprano in fiction and my neighbors in real life. He, like many of my neighbors, felt the strain of an evolving Italian-American heritage. Tony Soprano and my generation were being torn from their roots, rendered from the comfort of their familiar with changing rules and mores. The family, long a center of his life, was unraveling. Recall, his mother, Tony Soprano's mother, ordered his liquidation. The mob to which Tony Soprano was born to was morphing in ways he neither understood nor wanted. My book, Frankie, If You Get Hurt, I'll Kill You, explores these changes by leading the reader through the labyrinth of channels swept away for most of us of Tony Soprano's generation. Tony Soprano is fiction. His experiences were not. Return with me to those times where individuals did things differently there and needed to adapt to changes without comprehending the exact nature of those demands. Certainly, Tony Soprano did not quite understand. Neither did I, nor others of our generation. I provide insight in Frankie, If You Get Hurt, I'll Kill You, because my father was for many years the chief launderer of their shirts and the pressing. My mother had a lifetime friendship with a mob boss, and I covered them for the Newark News. The book is Frankie, If You Get Hurt, I'll Kill You, and available soon here and at your favorite bookstore. This is Don Mazzella. Our guest, our next guest, is Carew Pepritz. He's got a fascinating book, a fascinating idea, and we welcome him to the program. Carew, I'm glad to have you with us today.
Yeah, it's great to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Well, as we all ask all our guests, Carew, tell us first a little bit about your personal background, a little bit about your company, your book, and then finally a website that people can find out more.
You got it. Well, once again, it's great to be on your show, Don. And I've got one of those writer backgrounds where I sort of bounced around and did a lot of things. I've worked as a long-haul truck driver up in Alaska, and I drove tour buses. I got my degree in filmmaking at UCLA and worked in the feature film industry. I tried to get on the U.S. Olympic team in cross-country skiing back in the day, and did so by living in Norway and skiing with the Norwegian ski team, and have been a freelance reporter in the Mideast back during the Lebanese War. So I've sort of had a mixed bag of tricks, but it actually turned out to be all great fodder for writing the book that I have out right now called The Legacy Letters. And I had written in my early 20s. I had great success. And then, like I said, I ended up bouncing around the world and doing all these interesting things. And strangely enough, I got tired of the glitz and glamour of Hollywood and ended up becoming a cowboy. Now, my granddad had a small ranch when I was growing up in the Northwest. So I sort of came back to my roots, which I think is about rediscovering one's identity, which is sort of at the heart of what we're going to talk about today. And while cowboying on this ranch, I was the sole hand, I picked up the pen again and wrote this book. And for your listeners, the book is, again, called The Legacy Letters, and it's a fictional book. It's a series of letters written by a father who had never lived to see his kids, and these letters become their practical, moral, and spiritual guidebook for the rest of their lives. And brought it out into the world, and it's won a number of national awards, and it's the only book in publishing history to win both fiction and nonfiction awards. So I'm very, very proud of that. But it's all the amazing sort of marketing aspects that have come out about the book and people's response to it that's truly been the part that I was least expecting. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. So you can actually find out more about the book and all the unusual things I've done to market it at thelegacyletters.com.
Well, this is radio. Could you spell it out for our audience?
You got it. Yeah, it's the, T-H-E, legacy, L-E-G-A-C-Y, letters, L-E-T-T-E-R-S.com, all one word.
Where would we be without the internet? But now, having said that, tell us a little bit about the thrust of the book and why people should read it.
Well, I think that, the basic thrust of the book are these letters of life, that these practical, moral, spiritual letters of life that this father left behind for his children. And so they decided, they grew up with these letters, and again, this is all fictional, so they decide when they became older that they wanted to share 40 of the over 200 letters that their father left behind. So in a book the size about the Chicken Soup of the Soul series or Tuesdays with Maury, it's a very readable book, and the letters are everything from how to buy a used car to how to fall in love, how to take care of horses, thoughts on marriage. And so it's a whole series of life letters. But what's been fascinating to me is the people's response to the book. And they've come about saying, "You've reminded me of what's important in life again." And as an author, you don't write so much for a meaning. You write because there's something inside you that has to get out. And whatever the response is, you don't know where that's going to go. But at that point, when people started telling me that this is a book that was changing their lives and changing their perspective on how to live and how to find meaning again, at that point, you're no longer the author. You've become the messenger for whatever message that needed to get out into the world. So I that's been an extraordinary experience, getting those responses.
It sounds exciting. So I'm going to go right in and delve. Let's talk about love, which is always an interesting topic. In the letter, talk about love.
Talk about love. Oh gosh, you're gonna make me get back into the book there. You know, I think one of the things he talks about. So there's a part of the book is about he becomes estranged from his wife, and he ends up in a mountain cabin. This is a cabin where he was brought up as a young child, and we don't know where it's at because all these letters are private. So these are very intimate letters in a way, the way that he writes them. And he doesn't know his kids' names, so he calls them dear little ones, and then he writes these letters. But the love aspect of it is not only the love for his children, it's the love of his wife that he's never going to see again and that he's estranged from. So it becomes a love story, a romantic love story, but it's also a love story about life. Because really the central message of this book is about living life to the fullest. And that is something I had to relearn again. It's almost as if when you, relative to business, you forget, you almost lose your way when you start a business, and you have to find your way back to it. In a way, I have to read my book to find out, to remember why I was so in love with what, and writing it in the first place. So it's been a fascinating journey in that way.
Well, you know, we're a nation now where half of our marriages fail, and I have a favorite line, which is, I said I would love you forever. I didn't realize forever ended today.
Right.
That's the story of my first marriage. You know, we enter marriage with the idea that it's going to last forever. And some place down the line, it does end, and we're left with heartache and memories, and you know it's to me a very I was brought up to think that once you got married, you stay married. Didn't happen in my case. Second marriage has lasted much longer. But I'm fascinated by that aspect of it, and still at my advanced age, I'm still perplexed by the intricacies of marriage and love. And there are many types of love. I'm focusing on this because I believe your book has many, many aspects. So I'm going to stop there and ask, what would you like to talk about in your book that our audience might be interested in?
Oh, gosh. It's funny because I had to, you made me scramble to pick up the book and find out where the marriage part. Let me read a quick part here. This is going back to your thoughts about marriage. It says, little ones, as I see it, you get married, but you make a marriage. Some folks think, when you decide by some magical and incandescent flicker of the flame that the journey of life was made somehow better, deeper, richer, and more fulfilling by experiencing it with someone else, and that making sure that the magic never wanes and the flame never dies is your most important responsibility to each other. And he says, but the strangest thing happens on the way to making a marriage. The romance begins to rust. The love loses its luster, the friendship flounders, and the magic becomes musty. What happened? You expected Casablanca and you got the honeymooners. Somehow and somewhere in our foolish quest for a forever love, we forget that for silver to shine, you have to constantly polish it. And when you don't, the silver tarnishes. Marriage is love put to its ultimate test, the grindstone of life.
Wow. Couldn't agree more with that. Could not.
Yeah.
You work at marriage every day with the ups and the downs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then he talks about how do you make a marriage die very slowly. I mean, it's just interesting. No, that's a good piece there. It's interesting that you were talking about marriage. And so that's sort of the gist of this man being deeply emotional. He's trying to pass on knowledge, but he's trying to do it in a way that makes it very compelling to read. Don, one of the interesting things was when I was finished with the writing of the book and it was out for a couple of years, I realized one day, says, oh my gosh, you became a philosopher. And no one ever grows up wanting to be a philosopher. That's the last thing And here at the end of the day, you know, you grow up to want to be a fireman or a cowboy or, you know, whatever, a nurse or whatever, a doctor. And at the end of the day, I thought, God, this is it. This is you're a philosopher. You are trying to figure out how life works on all these different levels. And that's, like I said, it's been one wild journey.
We're talking with Karu Papritz. Karu, your book and how people can get it?
Yes, they can get it, of course, at the great Amazon. They can look on there for the Legacy Letters. It's a nice red cover on there. And we're on my book site at thelegacyletters.com.
Well, let's talk about another legacy letter. Pick out a topic that you'd like to talk about, and let's talk some more.
How about travel? I love to travel. How about your? Well, you've traveled, haven't you, Don?
Oh, 14 wars.
I think that would do it. So I've been traveling all my life, and I've lived abroad, and one of the things, my dad was a geography teacher, a community college geography teacher. And he was a ranger. So I had the best of both worlds of being outside and having this love of maps. And then, of course, as a young child, my love of books, which is my mom read quite a bit too. So, but we traveled and we would be in the back of the car around the U.S. hitting all these national parks or living in, for example, I was born in Yosemite National Park, and we lived in Grand Teton National Park and other places like that. And then we're living overseas. And so this travel influence, really, the travel bug got me early. And so one of the letters, my secret favorite letter in the book, is called Travel the World. And there's a, I'll read a quick line from the Travel the World part. Why does your old man love to travel, little ones, to be changed and to be changed again and again? Because when you travel, really travel, getting deep down into the towns and people, the land and the culture, you will be forever changed. Changed into a person of the world, one who has completed the journey into tolerance and acceptance of the world's vagaries and differences. Changed to give a damn about everything and everybody, not just forever riding on the coattails of your own purposefully fenced and tightly mowed backyard of a world. I love to travel, little ones, because of its essential curiosity.
Wonderful line. I believe curiosity is what makes a human being grow and be a better person. Curiosity.
Yeah.
When you lose that, I agree with you. But you know what? It's interesting. I've been all over the world, all seven continents, and I always come back to the United States and kind of reestablish my roots, because I feel this country is just so great and its people are just so great. What have you learned traveling around the world?
You know, just to go on your point there, yes, it's amazing how sometimes you have to wander away from your love to be reminded how great that love really is. And you know, I love just, I could travel and travel and travel, but gosh, there is something about coming home to the U.S. And then what I tell people is, as great as it is to travel around the world, travel inside the country, travel on the blue lines of the map, those places that aren't the interstates. You know, don't do the flyover. Get into the heart of this country, because it's amazing and the people are amazing. And who was it? Charles Kuralt. You know, knew him. Did you know him?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I can tell you a few stories, but go ahead.
Yeah, and what an inspiration. Here he was traveling all around the U.S. in his motorhome with his dog and interviewing people, and you really got to see the heart of America. And I feel the same way. I feel like every now and then it's just time to get out on the road and see the beauty we have in this country. Because I think in this day and age, with all the divisiveness and anger and all this stuff that's getting primed up to get us against each other, good gosh, you get out, we have more in common than we do. And I think by traveling this country and talking to people, and you see the goodness in people, you really do, and you see the all the things we have in common, and that's important.
I could not agree with you more. It's a funny thing. I always quote the line from Colin Powell when he said, you know, that America goes off to war, and all it asks of it, of the people, is some ground to bury its dead. You know,
yeah, it's very powerful. Yes.
It's a powerful statement, and, you know, it's true. But we're here to talk about you, not me. But
No, but I don't mind. It's a conversation, right? That's the best part.
That's what I love about this program. I get to meet people like you. what did Will Rogers say? There are no strangers, only friends I haven't met.
That's cowboy wisdom there at its heart. You got it.
Karu, that was a great one. Can you give us another?
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot. Let's see. There's, Don. I have to think of these. It's like trying to pull biblical quotes out of your back pocket when you're in a business mindset. Let me wait on that just a moment. I'll think of a really good one. Let me see.
We're talking with Karu Peretz. He's got a wonderful book out, and we're having a really great conversation as he thinks about a topic to.
I'm trying to think of a quote, and I can't come up with any right now. Oh, well, that's the way she goes. I probably have 100 of them on my back pocket, and when I want to have one pulled out at the right moment, so be it.
Well, you know the old saying, there are three ways you know you're getting old. First one is you begin to forget things, and I forget.
Don, gee, thanks. I feel better already.
What are your thoughts about raising children today in this world? Your book is about a father to his children.
Well, yeah.
What do you say to people today about the distractions that are happening, the breakdown of the family unit, and we no longer sit around the dinner table together. Oftentimes, each of us have our iPhones, and we're sitting there looking at that rather than talking to each other.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is a great one to get me started on. I had a fascinating encounter a couple months ago with this at this conference, and we had a drink afterwards, and he was lamenting to me about, because we were talking about the book, and I was talking about how people are finding meaning in it, and he said, yeah, you know, I'm having some problems in my marriage and my life. And I says, well, what gives? And he says, you know, I come home from a long day of work, and I walk into the front door, and nobody says anything. Well, why is nobody saying anything? Because they're all on their electronics. Everyone is deep into their phones, deep into their tablets, you know, all their online stuff. And he goes, and then in dinner time's the same way. And, you know, he tries to rein it in without too much success. And I said, and he says, I feel like I don't even know why I'm coming home anymore, why I'm working. And I hear this lament over and over and over again from so many people. And I said, okay. I go, you want my how to take care of this problem? I said, you need to go home and you need to rein it in and rein it in hard. And you need to create a document that everyone signs into. You need to sort of set the ground rules. But at the beginning of this, you need to create sort of a dramatic moment, because he feels like he was going to just get very, very angry and sweep everything away. And I said, that's okay. Take that anger and use it constructively. I said, take an old phone or something that you know that you're never going to use again, and smash it. Stomp on it. Do something and get their attention and say, we're not going to do this anymore. And cut them, you know, literally cut. So he ends up doing this. He said the entire family, their jaws dropped all the way to the floor. They couldn't believe what was going on. And then they had a, the old come to Jesus moment. They all sat down and said, we're not doing this. We're changing how we are as a family. And these devices aren't going to take over. They're not going to be in your bedrooms at night. There's a cutoff time. There's going to be, you know, we're just going to do it. So I gave him all these sort of a guideline, a list of things to do, and he did it. And then he comes back a couple months later. I saw him just literally the other day, and he says, thank you. He says, you saved my life, you know. But it was hard at first because the kids get so addicted to it, you know. And I said, one of the things you got to do is you got to get them outdoors. It is so tough to get kids outdoors anymore. I said, kick your kids outdoors. Go get out there with them. Because I think the other aspect of this is that, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree when we're talking about, oh, the kids are all part of the problem. The parents are part of the problem too. Because where are the kids learning this from? They're seeing their kids on the phones or their parents on the phones and the tablets. And he said, I'm guilty of that. He says, I've got to change that habit too. So, you know, as I like to say, it's the downward looking generation. And everyone's looking into their phone. No one's looking up and seeing what's coming out in front of what's coming up in front of them. So I do think this idea of, you know, on the cutting edge of Silicon Valley, they're talking about things like electronic Sabbaths, where you actually say on Sunday there's no electronics. And it's interesting. I'm starting to hear from people who are saying enough is enough in terms of the amount of digital use they have because they realize it's taking over their lives and their families.
Could not agree with you more. We're coming to the end of our time together, unfortunately. If you had two or three things you'd want to tell our audience, what would it be?
I think coming on the heels of talking about just what we were just talking about, this electronic sort of driven, this 24/7 world, I think to occasionally, and it sounds trite and it sounds old-fashioned, but to find some meaning in your life, take a few minutes out and just stop and smell the roses. I mean, literally, look up at the sky and say, gosh, for all of the intense pressures that go on in our lives, for all the busyness we create, this is nice to be alive. It's nice to be in this place. It's nice to be where I am in this life. It's nice to be where I'm going. It's nice to be in this country. You know, any number of things. But be thankful.
You faded out. Karu, you faded out.
Yeah, right there. I think, sorry about that. I think gratitude is incredibly important. I think being polite, I think it's underrated. I think we need to come back and say please and thank yous a lot more and pass around kindness. These are sort of part of the hearts of the book, and to remember that it's okay to be civil. And lastly, just find a way to whatever it is inside of you that wants to live life to the fullest, I think to find that. I know we keep coming back to the book, but a lot of people seem to find some roadmap within the legacy letters that reminds them how to live again, how to find meaning in their lives. And I think there's a bit of loss out there. I think people are looking for something or someone to help get them back on track.
Could not agree with more on that last sentiment. See it all the time as I go across the country or talk across the country. And you're not the first one on this program to say that. We've been talking. I hate to say this, but we have been talking with Karu Pumphreys because we've run out of time. But for one final time, your book and how and your website, Karu.
Yes. Yeah. The book is The Legacy Letters, and if you go to thelegacyletters.com, you can learn all about the fun first ever book signings I've done and all the interesting interviews I've had over the last years. And you can find out more about the book there.
Well, thank you so much. And you've got to come back and we've got to talk some more. It's been a real pleasure. And the link to that website will be on our website tonight. Thank you so
Wonderful,
much.
Don. Curly. Thank you. Oh, it's been a pleasure, Don. Thank you again.
You have been listening to Small Business Digest. Our website is the number 2 SB Digest. Go there to hear this and all past and future shows. And tell us of the guests you would like to hear on this program. Remember, this show is about helping our audience improve profit. I'm Don Mazzella, and thank you.